Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the time being, we're going to have with us Dr. Dennis Cuddy, at least for the first part of the program. Dennis, thank you so very much for being with us. Dennis, are you there? Well, I'm not sure what's going on. We don't seem to have Dr. Dennis Cuddy. Dr. Cuddy, are you there at all? Well, we don't have Dr. Cuddy, so I guess we're going to have to, of course, go ahead and try to make other arrangements. So we'll just sort of be talking a little bit about his latest article, which is called If War Had Not Come in Fierce and Exaggerated Form. And it talks basically about, the article talks about this new film with Tom Cruise. It just premiered, and of course, Tom Cruise talks about this gentleman. He's playing a military officer named Klaus Stauffenberg, who is the, and of course, Tom Cruise plays that part. And we'll see if we can get, let's see who we have here. Who do we have on line one? I guess we don't have anybody on line one. Well, we're going to see, but anyway, let's see who we have here. Hello? Are you there? Well, we're just having all sorts of problems right now. Anyway, of course, this Nazi colonel wanted to actually kill Hitler because, of course, they realized Hitler was leading the country into all sorts of disasters. Basically, people that really don't understand that the Second World War was totally manipulated. And until people really understand that Adolf Hitler was financed and helped by people here in the United States, so little of what's going on really makes sense. I mean, basically, we have a letter I found from Ambassador Dodd, and I found it in Colonel House's papers back at Yale University there. And, of course, Ambassador Dodd is writing to Colonel House saying, this is 1936. Why are the American corporations producing the war materials to be used by Adolf Hitler? I mean, there are over 100 American corporations over here. They are building the war material and arming Germany. And the terrible thing is, of course, that they can't get any funds out of money. They have exchange control, so they can't get any funding out of America. Why are the American corporations building up the German war machine? This is 1936. Well, the answer is really very, very simple. Why they wanted World War II. And they were working in our government at that time. People were deeply involved in the occult, who were laying the groundwork for the terrible Second World War, and I fear they were laying the groundwork for the Third World War as well. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. And we're going to try to get our producer to call Joel Skousen so we can get started with the program here. And certainly, Joel Skousen, as you know, comes from World Affairs Brief. And World Affairs Brief is on the front lines of what's going on. Joel writes a fascinating commentary every week, and we enjoy having him as a regular guest here at Radio Liberty. I think it's vitally important that people understand that nothing is as it appears to be. The news media, of course, gives us false material all the time. When you see them focusing our attention on certain specific issues, you know it is being done for a specific purpose. For instance, almost every article you will read today will actually tell you, that the economy is falling apart. And of course, the economy is falling apart But what you must understand is that they are creating a psychological impact in the minds of the American people. That psychology basically says that the economy is going to deteriorate as a result, why people are afraid to buy things. And if people are afraid to buy things, then other people are thrown out of work. Now, a great number of things are being done today to actually destroy our economy. What, of course, the spiraling destruction of the housing market was intentionally created. It wasn't that the government had no idea that what they were doing as far as the predatory lending practices. They knew exactly what they're doing. In fact, in February 14th of last year, 2008, Elliot Spitzer wrote an article that was published in the Washington Post, which we have, talking about how all 50 of the state attorney generals knew about the predatory lending practices and knew that eventually they could destroy our financial system. And, of course, the government did everything they could. The Bush administration did everything they could to block the state attorney generals from intervening and trying to preserve our economy. And this did not happen by accident. It happened by intent. The state attorney generals wanted to intervene and stop the lending the predatory lending practices that led to the home collapse, the collapse of the price of homes. And they wanted to do it back in 2001 and 2002. Well, of course, just a few days after the Elliot Spitzer put that article out, why he was... Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course I was just talking about how they engineered this whole financial crisis. One of the things that's really precipitated the housing crisis was, of course, the defaulting on loans. And what you don't understand is this was all created. How did they create it? Well, first of all, they allowed predatory lending practices out. Alan Greenspan was encouraging people to take out adjustable rate mortgages. And, of course, Thomas Friedman described what you'd have. You'd have somebody who's making $14,000 a year. You would talk him into buying a $750,000 home. He's making $14,000 a year. He's going to buy a $750,000 home with nothing down and no payments for 2 years. And then you take the mortgage that he signs and you bundle it with a lot of other home mortgages. And then, of course, you sell these all over the world. You know, you get them AAA rated. You have a derivative contract on them, an insurance policy. But you know there is no money behind those insurance policies. And then you wonder why, as financial institutions all throughout the world are holding these bonds, and of course they're worthless. They're worth maybe 30-40 cents on the dollar. This is the real problem. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And who do we have on the line here? Who do we have? Dennis on the line, or who's on the line? Well, we seem to be having trouble with getting through. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yes, I can hear you now. Hi, thank you, Dennis.
Okay, I could hear you before. You couldn't hear me.
All right, fine. Well, I'm glad I can hear you now. And basically, of course, we were going to talk about your article there, If War Had Not Come in Fierce and Exaggerated Form. So why don't you pick up the story?
Well, how much did you get? I heard you starting to talk about Colonel Klaus von Stauffenberg. How much did you get into?
Not very far, so you pick up the story.
Okay, well, I had been doing a series, The Rockefeller Plan, Part 1 and 2, and there'll be a 3 and 4, but when I started to see that this movie, Valkyrie, as they say it, I used to hear it pronounced Valkyrie, you know, the Norse mythology and so forth, but anyway... which is, of course, symbolic because, you know, that's symbolism for who does and who can and who can't wage war and so forth. So anyway, Tom Cruise was, this was before the premiere on Christmas, where he was having interviews on the talk shows. And he actually showed a clip from the film, and he basically two things he said. He was very surprised at the openness. This is a true story of Colonel Klaus von Stauffenberg as to what he did. I think there were 14 previous attempts to kill Hitler, and this was the 15th. And he was surprised at the openness, and then it showed a clip where he actually invited an individual, another officer in, said, close the door, and then proceeded to say he was plotting high treason, and he very openly. And you could see from the person who he was asking about this as to whether he wanted to participate in it, that the person was taken aback, you know, sort of shocked, surprised. The point is, Cruz, or von Stauffenberg, is the character he was portraying, had no real idea that this fellow would be with him. For all he knew, he could have smiled at him and say, sure, I'm with you, and walked out the door and told the nearest SS guy, and the next thing you know, there'd be a call and saying, Adolf wants you, Colonel, in to see him, and, you know, that would be the end of him. So the point is, it was very, very open, and you have to wonder why such openness. And as you see the film, it goes through, there's a number of people who were involved in this, and how a lot of these people in the German General Corps didn't care for Hitler. And the point is, they didn't care for Hitler for a long time. Now, I don't want anybody to misunderstand, but what I say at the top of the article, that particular plot was in 1944, and they had tried earlier. What Cruz and most people don't understand is that Hitler's ability to begin and wage World War II were all facilitated by the power elite. Now, I don't want people to misunderstand. Yes, there was a Hitler. Yes, he killed lots of people. Yes, he was evil. Yes, he was horrible. All that stuff happened. But what I've asked your listeners in the past to do is to not only look at things on the surface as they sort of appear, as they're reported, because that's fine. You know, that is the way reality is sort of played out. But I also encourage your listeners to look at things from the perspective of the power elite who is managing, facilitating people and events and so forth. And they sit above this sort of reality, and they manipulate things. And so I encourage people to look at it from that perspective. If something doesn't seem to make sense, like why would these people plotting to kill Hitler be so open? You know, if something doesn't make sense, ask yourself how this fits into the power elite's plan for things. And in this case, it's, you know, Hitler. I've mentioned before how one shouldn't look at Hitler as some sort of isolated, unique occurrence in and of itself that began and ended. It's really not. It's part of a larger plan, and I'll get into this, about war and the use of war by the power elite. The point is, Hitler's rise was facilitated, and Hitler's demise was facilitated. You know, there was a purpose to Hitler. When he served his usefulness, you know, that was it. It was time for him to go. And so what I do in this article is say, from the American perspective, and you could go back a long time, but, you know, from the American perspective, you would go back a couple of hundred years. And I've mentioned in previous programs how the power elite was very concerned about this young American republic which had formed. It was too independent of their control. They don't like that. They like to get you in debt, you know, so they can control you. And I've mentioned specifically in previous columns Philip Freneau's article. It was in 1792 in a publication called American Museum. And in there, he's describing how the power elite would regain control of the U.S., you know, its plan, and it would talk about the general welfare, all sorts of stuff. But he also specifically mentioned their plan to use a war and its predetermined outcome, in which case it would be a loss in this case. It doesn't have to be, but in the case they were mentioning, it would be a planned loss. Now, I've already described after that how the Civil War wasn't really what you think it was. It was not about ending slavery at all. I mean, Lincoln, before the war began, said if he could save the Union and not release one slave, he'd save the Union and forget about the slaves, too bad. And the Emancipation Proclamation wasn't even until, you know, a couple of years into the war in 1863. So it wasn't about slavery. That's not why it began. His purpose was, again, that this power elite wanted to separate the nation, divide it in two, and separate the southern states, forming a new Gulf Empire, which would be them and Mexico and Central America and Caribbean and so forth. And I've been through that, so we don't have to go through that again. But anyway, now, after that, you had the rise of, and we talked about this before, Cecil Rhodes and his secret society in 1891. And at that time, he had gotten these ideas from John Ruskin, his mentor at Oxford University, and he was writing this letter on February 5, confiding to his friend, W.T. Stead, about this idea. And he said it would, quote, ultimately lead to the cessation of all wars. Now, you'll see how they can use wars to eventually end wars with their total control. And he goes on and says, the only thing feasible to carry this idea out is a secret one, society, gradually absorbing the wealth of the world. That's what's going on now. If you look at what's going on now, you know, economic disaster and crisis and all that stuff, but there's more to that. To be devoted, he says, to such an object. And he says, fancy the charm to young America to share in a scheme to take the government of the whole world, end quote.
I think it's so important, Dan, is that people really understand how could something like this go on for centuries. And, of course, people have to understand that there is a spiritual component behind it. Certainly Cecil Rhodes was into the occult. When the gentleman he was writing to, William Stead, that you quoted, I mean, William Stead was into spiritualism. He was a theosophist, which is basically an organization formed by Madame Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, who was a Satanist. Until people understand the spiritual organizations that exist behind the scenes that exist today, none of this really makes sense. How could this go on from generation to generation? Well, why would some people become priests and, you know, spend their whole lives working for something that will never come to pass because they're dedicated to our Lord? And on the other hand, there are those that, of course, are dedicated to the other side. And they're working towards this world government. And once you understand that, well, you can understand why, you know, it was so important back in, you know, in the 1700s to separate America from Great Britain. America was then going to lead the world into this one world government. And that's exactly what our leaders are doing today. That's why the United Nations building is here in the United States. That's why we're the major financer of the United Nations. That's why we have troops stationed in 131 nations across the world, as well as over 700 overseas bases. We're not fighting communism. We've been financing communism for years. You have to have an enemy to get the American people to put up their money. Our leaders, and these are the invisible leaders who control both political parties, can pursue their goal of a world government. But go right ahead.
Sure. And in this, I'm not going to get too much into Hitler and the occult, but that was his driving force. He was initiated, you know, early on. He was demon-possessed. You know, very clear and obvious that was a driving force of his, deliberately. That was planned.
So many of his SS people, so many of the people who surrounded him were into the occult as well. And that is why these terrible, terrible things were done at the prison camps and to prisoners. And, you know, but people don't understand that. They do not allow this to be widely discussed here in America because those same forces are here as well. Right ahead.
That's true. And when the Russians, the Soviets, entered Berlin at the end of the war, there were thousands of Tibetan Lamas in Nazi uniforms. I mean, that wasn't for no reason.
Well, of course, we just don't talk about this. Because, actually, we have a book where, of course, Winston Churchill orders this is not to be brought out at Nuremberg. We can't let the American people know. Well, Dr. Cuddy, you were right ahead.
Okay, well, back where we were with W.T. Stead, of course, as you were saying, he was into the occult. He had his good friend, Annie Besant, to write a review of Blavatsky's Secret Doctrine for his Pall Mall Gazette, it was called. So they were very, very much into this stuff. And the same thing with Cecil Rhodes. And as I mentioned before, John Ruskin, his mentor, had the swastika on his gravestone. And I got a picture of that gravestone in my book, The Globalist. So they were definitely into that. Now, in terms of war, and that's why I titled this, If War Had Not Come in Fierce and Exaggerated Form, what you have is a lot of people look at the Cecil Rhodes' secret society and say, okay, I see this was a British plot. Well, yeah, I mean, Rhodes was there, and Oxford, and Rhodes Scholars, and all that sort of stuff. But it's very, very interesting that here at the initiation, where he's talking about this, you know, we are the best northern blood, which is what Ruskin said, if you look at the list of his Association of Helpers, there's a list of his Society of the Elect members, the Circle of Initiates, and then outside of them, the semi-secret Association of Helpers. It not only has the Commonwealth nations, like people I've mentioned in the past, like P.E. Corbett of Canada and others like that. There's Germans. I mean, that's not British, you know. Okay, there's, you know, a lineage and all that stuff, but Germany is different from Britain. And so you might ask yourself, well, what are these Germans doing as part of Cecil Rhodes' secret society? And so I mentioned a couple of names, Helmuth James von Moltke. And I've talked about him in previous articles, and you know how his wife and the British Secret Service and all that sort of stuff were linked up. And another fellow, Adam von Trott zu Solz, S-O-L-Z. So these were part of this the secret effort as well. So remember, when you're going down the line with this supposed battle between the British and the Germans, just remember that Cecil Rhodes, part of his effort, included Germans. So anyway. The Association of Helpers, as we mentioned before, form roundtable groups, and out of that comes the Council on Foreign Relations, largely funded by J.P. Morgan interests, Thomas Lamont, and some others. They're the money mechanism for the powerly here. Now, I've mentioned in the past about World War I and how it was planned and forecasted in 1908 and all this sort of stuff. So we don't have to go into that. But the purpose of it was, you have to have this war so that the people become weary and say, oh my goodness, we don't want to go through this again. So the purpose of that war was to get us to the League of Nations. And of course, I mentioned the famous quote by Colonel House, who was the Paralese agent in the Foreign Affairs, the CFR's Journal, June 1923. And that's where he wrote, quote, if war had not come in fierce and exaggerated form, end quote, the League would not have materialized. So that was that purpose. Now, if you look just a few years later, there was a book by John Kenneth Turner called Shall It Be Again? ?1922. And what you find is what most of your listeners probably have never heard about. I mean, they've heard about, you know, British and armaments and all this sort of stuff. But what you need to understand is that World War I was totally avoidable and very easily. You eventually had the Triple Entente against the Triple Alliance. But it was a step-by-step thing. In other words, you have the Austrian ultimatum to the Serbians, and, you know, the Serbs go to the Russians, please, you know, help us against these mean old Austro-Hungarians who are going to kill us. And then when Russia comes in, Austria-Hungary says to the Germans, oh, please help us, because we don't want to fight the Russians. You know.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Dr. Cuddy. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, Dr. Cuddy is talking about wars, and the First World War was a totally contrived war. Why would rational men want to contrive a war? Well, because you're not dealing with rational men. You're dealing with men who were motivated by a different cause. They felt if they could have a horrible, bloody conflict with terrible suffering and countless millions of people killed, then they'd be willing to go along with the world government, and that's what it was all about. In fact, we can find places, you know, where actually, read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, where, of course, one of the gentlemen who was with Colonel House over there at Versailles Treaty runs into the British, and they explained to him that it was all about the white man's burden. It wasn't about, you know, conflict between, you know, the Germans and the English and French. It certainly wasn't about making money, you know, although that was a byproduct of it, but it was really about this white man's burden to bring about this world government. And it was there, of course, that the Versailles, that the English, because they'd lost so many men in the trench warfare and so many men in the bayonet charges, that England, of course, was really a basket case. They asked the Americans to pick up the leadership of this drive towards world government, and of course, behind both groups were these powerful occult forces. So suddenly now we've got the center of power shifting from Great Britain to the United States, with the Council on Foreign Relations created in 1921, that would eventually become America's invisible government. Pick up the story there.
And early on, when this plan was sort of first presented, Andrew Carnegie was writing that when the plan was originally presented to Lord Rothschild, he said, well, you know, looks good, Cecil, but it's not going to work unless you get America involved. And so that was the part of the effort to pull us in, just like Churchill would, you know. I have a quote in one of my books about how we're going to pull the Americans into the Second World War, whether they want to or not. We'll sort of create a situation here.
And I guess it's so important people understand this, because obviously they're maneuvering towards a new war in the Middle East. And, of course, they're talking already between Pakistan and India, whether it's going to materialize, we don't know. But this is so obviously manipulated. We suddenly find now that the terrorists who blew up the Taj Mahal hotel there, and, of course, who attacked the Taj Mahal hotel and tortured the people, the Americans and the Jewish residents of the hotel. Then we find out that they were coming out of Pakistan. They were financed by the Pakistani intelligence, and, of course, Pakistani intelligence funded by the CIA. Are they going to do it all over again? Go right ahead, Dennis.
Deja vu all over again. If it works once, why not try it again? So my point here in the First World War is how it was totally avoidable, and the people actually didn't want the war, not just Americans. You had a case of the Germans saying, okay, Austria-Hungary, we see your bind. You know, we see Russia coming in on the side of Serbia, and we will help you if France and England don't join. If France and England join, we're not getting into this. We're not getting into this. And so I've already mentioned before about Sir Edward Grey, who was a foreign minister, and he deliberately misled Prince Lichnowsky, the German ambassador over in England, saying, yeah, sure, you know, we won't get in, don't worry about that, no problem. So the key, though, was the French. And this is 1914. You have in the summer the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand. And it's, you know, very early, and all of this is playing out rather quickly. You know, will you come in? No, yes, no, like that. And the French don't want to. They're not going to. In other words, there's no world war. Because Germany isn't going to come in on the side of, you may have a war between Austria-Hungary and Russia, but that, you know, that's it. That's as far as it goes. So the key was getting the French in. Well, in this book, Shall It Be Again, and you don't read this in your history books, if any of you have been through college and learned about this, but what happened is the J.P. Morgan firm, this is the firm that's, you know, the funding mechanism for the Parolate, for the CFR, all this stuff, they have a fellow, and he gets the... together with another man named Hannatou. He's a French fellow. And basically, what they do is they dissuade the French leaders from staying out of the war. They say, we will, you know, we're going to have the scare campaign. You know, we'll deal with the horrible Huns and the things they're doing over there, and, oh, you know, end of the world, and we'll scare the French. And if you come on in, France, then we, J.P. Morgan, you know, this the Power League people, we will maneuver America into the war on your side. And so when the French heard that, they say, hey, you know, vive la guerre or something. And so they decide to get in. But it's only because J.P. Morgan Bank, which had also backed Japan when it declared war on Russia in 1904, had done this. Otherwise, no world war.
And, of course, you can see the same thing happen today as they try to get us to hate the Muslims. You know, when the Muslims hate us, and they're going to come over here and attack us, that's why we have to take our shoes when they go to the airport. But if there's really, of course, a threat from terrorism, why aren't they close our southern borders? Why, of course, have there been no major attacks in the United States? Here, you know, since the September 11th attack, is there really a war on terrorism? Do the Muslims really try to hate us? Or are they trying to generate that hatred? And I think they're doing a pretty good job. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and we're just pointing out the similarities between what has happened in the First World War and, of course, what happened in the Second World War. We had to get us to hate the Germans and the Japanese, and, of course, today, notice, of course, even within the Christian community, so many books coming out to get us to hate the Muslims. Oh, they're terrible people. They, you know, they mistreat women, and, yeah, certainly they mistreat women, but they mistreat them in Saudi Arabia, but we never emphasize that. Could you imagine if day after day after day after day we heard about how terribly the Saudi Arabians were, and you know that if you got caught stealing in Saudi Arabia, they cut off your hand. But, of course, we don't ever talk about that. It's just all the rest of the Muslims that they try to get us to hate. They hate us, and I will tell you that, that actually I'm sure there is some hate and anger there, and many of the people who have joined the, you know, the terrorist movement have joined it over there in Afghanistan and in Iraq because of our mistreatment of prisoners. And because we have tortured their people, and don't believe that we don't torture them, that we have the Taguba, General Taguba's report, Major General Taguba, who lost his military career because he told the truth, and he tells about strapping, you know, electric wires to genitals and genitalia and electrical stimulation of all sorts of horrible parts of the body. How could that be going on? Why would a civilized society be doing that? Well, of course, that's what the Muslims are saying, and that is why many of them joined the terrorist movement, was in retaliation for our mistreatment of prisoners. Now, how could you be so stupid as to do a thing like that unintentionally? I think they know exactly what they're doing. But you pick up the story, Dr. Cuddy.
It's not just that you would not intentionally be so stupid as to do it, but you would also not allow the photographs to get out showing that you did it. So it's not just that they did something. It's like that Nassar statement. You Americans seem to make stupid, complicated mistakes, which makes us wonder if you really aren't doing this on purpose. So it's not just that they did it, but, oh, my goodness, look, where did these photographs of this come from? And they got spread all over the world to inflame the Muslims over there against us. I guess that would prolong the war. Gosh, that might even lead to a permanent military presence, which just might be the goal and so on. So anyway, the J.P. Morgan interest, the partner in this First World War, that one guy, Robert Bacon's his name, one guy basically caused the First World War. Now, you're not going to read that. You know, go to your college history professor and say, what about Robert Bacon? He'll say, what? Who? Robert who? So you're not going to hear about that, but this guy, together with Hanato, the French guy, have the scare campaign.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Dennis was just talking about him, that fellow named Bacon. You'll never read about him in your textbooks. You'll never hear it discussed in college classes, but basically he was an agent of J.P. Morgan, and he convinced the French at the time of the First World War to get involved. The French didn't want to get involved in a war over there with Germany. I mean, they didn't want to lose a lot of their millions of their men, you know, in the trenches and the poison gas and all of these things. The French didn't want to go to war. But of course, this agent of J.P. Morgan promised if the French would go into the war, they'd bring the Americans into the war. They would finance the war, and the French leaders foolishly agreed to go into World War One. And then, of course, the English came in. They were planning on it. They were already orchestrating this whole thing. They were working with J.P. Morgan. Incidentally, J.P. Morgan was very deeply involved in the occult. He never, of course, had said would make any of his major stock market moves without consulting the astrologers. So, I mean, we begin looking at so many of the people of great wealth in America, whether it be Carnegie, Rockefeller, J.P. Morgan, Mellon, all these people, all involved in the occult. And, of course, this is what energized them and why they were so anxious to get us from war to war to war. People have forgotten that during the Second World War, Henry Ford backed not only Hitler, but he backed the communists over in Russia. He built a massive plant over there in Russia, the Gorky plant. And then supposedly he backed Adolf Hitler because he was anti-communist. And, of course, the truth of the matter is both of these forces behind both of these were the occult, both communism and Nazism. And that's why Henry Ford, who was deeply involved in the occult, he was involved in theosophy, that's why he backed them. But Dr. Cuddy was just talking about the origins of the First World War and how, of course, it was the J.P. Morgan interests urging France to go into the war, promising to bring America into this war. This wasn't our war. We never should have sent our boys over there. 125,000 American boys died there for no reason at all. And all of the propaganda that was used to get us into the war was false, phony propaganda. Oh, my goodness, the terrible Huns were cutting off the hands of little Belgian boys, cutting off the breasts of the Belgian women. Oh, we've got to go to war to protect those people. Just like we had to go to war in Afghanistan because, of course, the Taliban were so terrible. They were mistreating their women and But you always have to get the people to believe, you know, that what you're doing is fighting for righteousness. And, of course, what they do is they inflame both sides. That's how you get a good war going. You get everybody hating everybody else. Go right ahead, Dennis.
Right, in fierce and exaggerated form, as Colonel Howe said. Just as an aside, since you mentioned some of those people, Mellon, the Mellons had a lot of money into what was called, it was like this really super-duper occultic Swiss place called Ascona. I think it's A-S-C-O-N-A. I've got it in my Now is the Dawning of the New Age, New World Order book, how that the occult was involved in that. And a lot of, you know, the New Agey types will, you know, years later would still go over there, the Hitler types, and a lot of things. But anyway, so all of these guys, like you say, are involved in the occult in some fashion or another. So anyway, that takes care of France. Robert Bacon gets them in. And, of course, in England, I've already mentioned Sir Edward Grey. But in terms of the core of Cecil Rhodes's group, one of his very, very close allies, there's like a trio immediately around Rhodes, and then a circle of initiates around them, and then the associated helpers. But one of the three people, Reginald Balliol Brett, Lord Eshuy is known, I include in my books from his diary, where he is having a meeting. So I just met with Henry Morgenthau, a big money supporter of Woodrow Wilson. And what we see is that we'll have to shed American blood as soon as possible to get the U.S. Into the war in 1917. Now, he specifically mentioned France, so this is all about, you know, France, but Escher, of course, is part of the Rhodes networks. What I'm saying is all of this is tied up. You know, we have to get American blood shed as soon as possible to, you know, bolster the French people. Okay, here we go, and now here comes England, and, you know, we got our world war. Now, when the League, of course, failed to produce the desired world government, there's, you know, the Henry Cabot Lodge and all that sort of stuff we won't go into, then you have to have, of course, the Second World War. So you have to manufacture this war to produce the second attempt, the United Nations, which was discussed long before the end of World War II. In my book, The Globalists, I'll indicate long before World War II ended, there were literally conferences about the United Nations. They were referring to it, you know, by that title, the United Nations will blah, blah, blah. So what you need to do then is ask yourself about the Second World War and how that was facilitated or manufactured, Hitler's ability. Now, I'm not saying Hitler was like a figment of our imagination. He was real. He was, you know, a nasty person. But his ability to begin and wage the war was facilitated by these same people. He wouldn't have been able to do that. I mean, he wouldn't have had the, you know, the economic power and all this sort of stuff.
In fact, Germany didn't have any oil. Where did he get his oil? Why, of course,
right.
The Standard Oil Company gave him special patents so that he could begin manufacturing oil from coal. You know, where did he get his tanks and his cars and his trucks? Why, they were being built by General Motors and Ford over there in Germany. That's all covered beautifully in Anthony Sutton's wonderful book, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler. And, of course, another book, Charles Hingham, Trading with the Enemy. The United States and Great Britain certainly were instrumental in arming Adolf Hitler, not only before the war, but even during the war. And, of course, it was the Standard Oil that was providing the German submarines with the oil that they needed, the diesel engines, so they could attack our ships, so they could kill our boys. But it was all, you know, it was all put on. The trouble was that the boys who fought and bled and suffered and died bravely never understood, any more than the people over in Vietnam understand we didn't go over there to win, or the people in Korea understood we didn't go over there to win. Until you understand that all of these wars are contrived, then, of course, nothing makes any sense. Go right ahead.
Right. And so the American banks, J.P. Morgan, British banks, funded the German industries, particularly I.G. Farben, from Hitler's early days. And you were mentioning Anthony Sutton and so on. G. Edward Griffin, in his book, of course, The Creature from Jekyll Island, talks specifically about Farben, saying, quote, was the primary source of funding for Hitler and staff. Now, a lot of people say, okay, so they gave him some money, but it wasn't just that. And in addition, Farben staffed and directed Hitler's intelligence section, and it ran the Nazi slave labor camp. So this wasn't just a munitions factory somewhere.
And in fact, it was really very interesting. I was stationed in Germany right after the Second World War. and the IG Farben factories and the IG Farben building, the big IG Farben building in Frankfurt, wasn't touched by the bombing. I mean, the terrible rubble. I was stationed in Mainz, you know, the whole city was in rubble. But, of course, the IG Farben building wasn't touched at all. Why? Because, of course, they were working in concert with the Americans, and, of course, the IG Farben was funding Adolf Hitler. Go right ahead.
And the rest of the quote I was reading from Ed Griffin's book says, this is a part of the quote, quote, during the Allied bombing raids over Germany, the factories and administrative buildings of IG Farben were spared upon instructions from the U.S. War Department. So it wasn't just, you know, an accident or some colonel decided, well, you know, bomb over here rather than over there. And, oh, looky there, we could have hit the Farben plant. No, no, it was directed by the U.S. War Department. The orders came down, you know, from on high, do not hit the IG Farben plants. You know, not just their administrative, their factories. So leave those munition factories intact. We have to have the Germans able to kill us. Don't destroy those, you know, the places where they're making the munitions and bombs. So hit everything else, but leave those buildings alone, because if they can't have more bombs and, you know, rifles and munitions and cannons and whatever, then now they're not going to be able to kill us. So that's what we want. You know, that's what we want. Leave them alone so they can kill us.
And as just it was in Vietnam, we were not allowed to bomb the rail lines or anything around Hanoi where all the munitions were coming in from Russia, which we were funding at the time. And then, of course, they wouldn't let us hit the electric generating plants. We could have wiped out North Vietnam at any time, just destroyed their electricity and put them back to the Stone Age. They wouldn't let us do that in Vietnam. They wouldn't let us do it in North Korea when we were fighting there. After all, if you did that, why the war would end, and how would you be able to then to keep the war going if you didn't have an enemy to fight? So if you haven't seen a little pamphlet on the Communist Capitalist Alliance going into how we funded the North Vietnamese all during the Vietnam War, just as of course we're funding the ISI over there in Pakistan today, that's funding the terrorists that are going into India to actually kill American citizens. They specifically targeted American tourists and Jewish tourists over there, and then of course they also funding the Taliban. The ISI funds the Taliban, who kills our boys in Afghanistan. They say, oh, we got to send more troops over there, those wicked Taliban. Everybody's forgotten that we were funding the Taliban right before September 11th. If you read George Bush's speech on the 20th of September 2001, you can still pull it down from his website. If you didn't read it, I believe it's the 20th or 21st of September, right after the attack, where he talks about how America is the largest source of humanitarian aid for Afghanistan at that time. Afghanistan, that's the Taliban we were funding. Go right ahead, Dennis.
Right. And so if your listeners just think about it for a minute, suppose one of your listeners, as an individual, was president, and you were at war with another country. Why would you, in logical terms, and this is what I mean by look at things not just from the perspective of how they're presented to you from the news media, but look at it from the perspective of what the power elite's goals are. Why would you, listener, as president of the U.S., say, okay, you know, here go the planes. Our planes are going over there, and we're going to bomb this place. And you can bomb all these places, but whatever you do, don't bomb the place where they make their weapons that kill us. Why would you do that? It's sort of like, you know, Br'er Rabbit and the rabbit in the briar patch. You know, do anything, but don't throw me in the briar patch. So anyway, what you find is when you look at the U.S. War Department, it was widely staffed by agents of the power elite. People who had worked for Rockefeller's National City Bank, for another company called Dillon Reed and Company, which was a Rockefeller company, for J.P. Morgan's Equitable Trust, and so on. You know, these are guys who are staffing the War Department. Now, prior to the Second World War, I've mentioned this before, so I won't spend a lot of time, but H.G. Wells, who was a power elite agent, in his book, The Shape of Things to Come, specifically said it would begin, this is 1933, he's writing the book, and he says, specifically, it's going to begin the Second World War around 1939. Now, you know, he didn't say 1935. He didn't say 1943. He said specifically 39, and, you know, which it did, and, it, you know, over a German-Polish dispute and so on. That would be like you, the listener, saying, all right, in 2014, there will be specifically then this war over this specific issue. Now, how would you know that? You know, that would be an amazing guess. So chances are real good this wasn't a guess, but it was planned. Now, about that same time, in the late 30s, the German general staff developed this secret plan, and I've mentioned it before, but I'm going to, I don't think anywhere before I've actually read the thing, so I'll do this rather quickly, because you need to get the flavor of this. Now, this is published in The Time for Decision, that book. It's by Sumner Wells, CFR member, high government official over in Europe. And this is this fellow was really, really close to the German general staff in the 30s. There's even, if you go online, pictures of him and I think it's Goering or somebody looking at some artwork. They stole, you know, they did a lot of stealing of artwork from Jews and others. So anyway, he's very close to him. So before we enter the war, he's like really close and they're sharing all kinds of things with him. And so Wells in Chapter 9 reveals that the German general staff, quote, made detailed plans for a later renewal of its attempt to dominate the world when the favorable moment arrives, perhaps two generations from now, end quote. Now, just stop for a minute and think. He's writing this in 44. He knows about it in 43. The guys go underground, two successive countries around 1940, and I've already mentioned Paul Dickoff. All right? This makes no sense unless you're talking about we're going to lose this war. I mean, I mentioned before, and I'm not going to beat this over the head, but if you're planning to win a war, you don't need to plan for anything in two generations in 50 years. You know, you win, the British are vanquished, you know, Colonel whatever takes over everything, that's it. So Wells goes on to say, quote, half the mechanism is secret and will so remain, and involves the theory of indirect complicity in three principal ways. A, it will try to create doubts among the people of each country as to the ability, integrity, wisdom, or loyalty of their leading statesmen. Now think about this in terms of today and recently, Clinton and Obama and Bush and so on. B, in critical moments, it will attempt to paralyze or to diminish the capacity for cool thinking by the people as a whole, right? Got to create a panic. C, it will search each country for men who, through ambition, vanity, or personal interest, will be disposed to serve the causes. Agents of the German general staff have already been naturalized, usually in two successive countries, so that their future activities will be less suspect. The majority of them are being trained to appear as men of large commercial or financial interests. Yeah, think about that in terms of today, the, you know, the financial, oh my gosh, you know, how did this happen? Financial interests over a period of years gaining a controlling influence in labor unions, in the banking world, in chambers of commerce, and through these channels, an indirect influence in the press. When the right time comes, stimulate internal dissension sufficiently to destroy the morale of the people in those countries marked as victims, end quote. Now, just think about that in terms of what recently happened. Just think about that. So that's the quote from this 1944 book, which was written probably in 43, and the German general staff people in two successive countries have already been trained. So we're talking 1940s. This is long before the Nazis lose. So right there, this is a plan for a loss. Not a victory, a loss. So that's what you have to think of. So the only reason for such a plan is that Hitler would lose the war. And if he won, you know, that's it. So once again, this is like Colonel Stauffenberg's plot in this movie. And its surprising openness and so forth makes sense. You know, just like the First World War and the Second World War. Now you see that Hitler's time, his rise to power, World War II in fierce and exaggerated form, and Hitler's demise, all part of the power elite's plan to create an environment favorable for establishing world government. In that case, it would be the UN. Then, of course, you have succession wars, Korean Vietnam. They're planned as well. In the USA Magazine, that's the title of it, May 1951, General Douglas MacArthur reveals, quote, I am convinced I was restrained in Korea by some secret administration policy directive or strategy about which I was not informed, end quote. This is why there was a secret strategy for a no-win war. We could have won it, but we were not supposed to. Also, we've mentioned before how another agent of the power elite, General George Marshall, had facilitated Chinese communists coming to power in 1949. Now, why would we do that? Why would we be bolstering the Soviets, you know, when giving them nuclear weapons and information and then the Chinese communists? Well, if you look at State Department Study Memorandum No. 7, now that was published in 1961 under Rhodes Scholar Secretary of State Dean Rusk. Remember it said, quote, if the communist dynamic was greatly abated, the West might lose whatever incentive it has for world government, end quote. That's why you had to have the Soviet Union built up. That's why you had to bring the communist Chinese to power. I think I hear the music, do I?
You do, and we're going to be back in just a moment to wrap up the program. But ladies and gentlemen, as we look and see what's going on today, as far as the financial collapse of our nation, why do they want that? Why do they want to impoverish our people? And at that point, they hope that we'll be willing to go along for the New World Order and the New World Financial System and the New World Religion and the New World Leader. Go right ahead, Dennis. We've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Okay, so this is why you had to have the Korean War and the rise of the communist Chinese to power and, you know, bolstering the Soviets and so on. Because you had to have this dynamic to have the West still have an incentive for world government. You mentioned earlier about Vietnam, and I would just mention at the beginning of the broadcast, I talked about Philip Freneau's 1792 revelation about a planned war, a planned war and its loss. And the purpose of that would be, and it was in Vietnam, to undermine patriotism, because if you undermine national patriotism, then you have a world government that's more acceptable. And so I'll just read this final thing from the New York Times magazine in case you, you know, some of your listeners may have doubts about the purpose of the Vietnam War. On May 22, 1974, you had the New York Times publishing the 1973 findings of pollster and CFR member Daniel Yankelovich. Now, his findings, now remember, it used to be America very patriotic, you know, flag waving, you know, do it. You remember Kennedy's statement about ask not what you can do, your country can do for you, but what you can, you know, very patriotic. Okay, after the period of Vietnam War, remember, in fierce and exaggerated form, Yankelovich finds that only 19% of college-educated youth and only 35% of non-college-educated youth between 16 and 25 years of age thought patriotism is an important value. So before the Vietnam War, very patriotic. No, 70, 80, 90%, yes, patriotism is wonderful. After this fierce and exaggerated form of Vietnam, no win again, what you have is a tremendous decline in patriotism. That opens the door for people being more willing to accept a world government. If you no longer believe in national patriotism, then, you know, you open the door. And that's what the purpose of this was, this long, drawn-out tragedy of Vietnam. It would set the stage for the third attempt at world order, which was the title of a Rhodes Scholar Harlan Cleveland's 1977 book, The Third Try at World Order. And that was shortly after the end of the Vietnam War. And I guess time's running out. We can pick up next time.
All right, fine. Well, I guess it's been Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and we've been talking about the origin of war, and you must understand the origin of the past wars to understand that I fear that they are planning on some sort of a conflict over in the Middle East. If you haven't read my January 2008 newsletter, you need to go into the background of how we were actually facilitating Pakistan building a nuclear bomb. Why would you want to do that? Of course, we couldn't let the American people know. It's a Sybil Edmonds story, January 2008. Go up on the Internet, read it, and understand if we've given nuclear weapons or allowed them to get Pakistan to get nuclear weapons, and India has them and they're traditional enemies, what would happen if we had a nuclear war there? And what would happen to America as well? Dennis, thank you so much. Goodbye. God bless you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course this is the time when I need to remind our listeners out there that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And if you're in a position to help us, we'd love to hear from you. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. You can join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and get our 4 best tapes of the month, get our monthly newsletter, or you can simply subscribe to the newsletter, whatever you'd like to do. You know, we talk about, well, are there really these people of great wealth that work behind the scenes that, of course, determine what the future's going to hold? If you get a little pamphlet we put out, it's called the Oil Deception. It's 5 of my newsletters on oil. And in that Oil Deception, the last the newsletter, tells about the experience I personally had in early July of last year. Lindsay Williams came and told me that at that time, of course, the stock market was doing well. The price of oil was pushing $147 a barrel. Oh, commodities were going up, and Lindsay Williams told me that he had talked to a man who, of course, I knew who he was, a key person in the power elite who told him that the price of oil was going to drop to $50 a barrel, that we were going to be plunged into a terrible economic crisis that would go on for many, many years, that the economy of Dubai and other countries over in the Middle East would simply begin to crumble. And, of course, the only thing that he was told was that John McCain would win, which he didn't. But it was simply, I think, because they shifted their power elite over to Obama. And if you think Obama was elected by the radicals and the leftists, you haven't looked at the background of the people that are going to surround him. They're all coming from the key positions, National Security Advisor, the Secretary of State, Secretary of Commerce, Secretary of Defense, Secretary of so many of the other people in the cabinet, and the key advisors are all coming from the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, and the Trilateral Commission. That's my December newsletter, which will be out available very, very soon. You need to understand that nothing is as it appears to be, that Obama was put into power by the same people who financed John McCain, who control both political parties and make mockery out of the electoral process. When you understand that, so many things make sense. And then, of course, when you begin to understand that behind all of this are powerful spiritual forces. And that's why you need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, to listen to my talk on the forbidden secret. The forbidden secret. And there's a syllabus that goes with that you really need to get. So get, of course, the talk on the planned police state and the syllabus that goes with that. You need to see the DVDs, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. And the DVD, The Riddles in Stone, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital. Those of you who listen regularly, remember last Monday when we had James Wasserman on, a member of a secret society, the OTO, a disciple of Aleister Crowley, telling about the secret architecture of our nation's capital. He recognizes all of these things. We just look at things from a different worldview. Very nice man. I enjoyed talking to him. And we hope maybe we can learn from his. You must understand, he sees it exactly as I do. This has been going on for 5,000 years. That's why they have a pyramid on the back of our dollar bill. It has nothing to do with America. That's why they have the glorified eye over the top of the pyramid on the back of the dollar bill, an emblem of the ancient mystery religions that have been around for 5,000 years. If you don't believe it, of course, we have an interview with Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, where he talks about the emblem on the back of the dollar bill and says it's been around for 6,000 years. Well, I won't quibble over 1,000 years. That's Professor Quigley. You can get that interview with the Tragedy and Hope special or in our Secret Government special or the 4-tape set on the secret government. There really is a secret government, but they cannot let you understand what's going on. They control the media largely. Have you ever noticed you go from network to network? They're all giving you the same news. But, of course, they want to give you the idea that you're getting the truth. Well, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. But pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection.